empty buildings or land that used to have buildings on it from the Seaside Company and allow people to get out of these large projects with overcrowded densities. Perhaps somebody like Habitat for Humanity, if we would supply the land, would be able to supply nice owner-occupied buildings on a less dense scale, which would give people a sense of community pride and a stake in the neighborhood, which would obviously have a big impact on the quality of life, and the neighborhood would, I think, be benefited, and the whole city would be benefited, and you would have a much more aesthetic and humane living situation in the area, probably for even less money.
Any indication that the budget hearing that, well, anything that impacted this hopeful move from these large-scale, unproductive, low-income projects to a sort of a more, you know, spread-out, family-oriented situation, the Rex Court solution rather than the Dolphin Lee solution? I know I heard, I'm asking that question, but let me kind of add to it, that there was, I guess, a hearing right before the budget, several of the many hours spent on the budget, where there was a discussion of a proposal by the Victory Organization, I'm not sure, at Elmer Cotto.
I think it's called Victory Outreach, and they're like a church that's operating just recently in the La Playa building down there on Lybrandt and I guess it's Riverside.
Well, yeah, I know. I don't know much about the church. I know that Phil Baer, a resident and activist down there, was quite critical of how the city has been maintaining a sort of a, what he regards as sort of an alien trailer, which it calls, the city calls it a temporarily located community center, temporary but there for the last 7 or 8 years, which really, I guess to the Bears and others, it seemed to be a kind of a propaganda center for the, I don't know, the redevelopment agency's latest schemes to clear away people from the beach flats, and also takes up the park that the community could be using.
Yeah, Phil brought that issue back again last night, that was supposed to be a temporary place for a community center in the beach flats, and it's now been over 8 years, and that it was a park there, and that, you know, naturally, a lot of the people in that community, being from Mexico fairly recently, where there basically are no human rights and the cops walk around with machine guns, are not real comfortable with having government agencies right next to their house, and, you know, various city employees that they perhaps regard as snitches or spies or something like that, you know, walking around. And I think that that the city was probably well-intentioned at one point putting that there, but I think once again they need to pay some attention to the people in the community before they start making decisions on what's good for them. I mean,
what did the Victory Outreach
announced that the appeal against allowing that to continue had been dropped by himself. So apparently he's reached some kind of an accommodation with that operation, and maybe I think what he was complaining about was that he wanted to have the trailer removed and restored to a park, as was promised 8 years ago, and that community center moved to that same building. So perhaps there's been some kind of an accommodation reached.
I guess his problem was the Victory Outreach was going into the building where he hoped that the trailer would be.
Exactly, yeah, I think that was at least a large part of his problem, and maybe they reached some accommodation on that space issue.
I know there are a lot of folks from Victory Outreach, a lot of the Hispanic faces. Apparently, it's a, what is it? It's a, I don't know much about the group.
It seemed like sort of a faith-based rehab program, and I happen to be sitting, my wife and I, next to the fellow who introduced himself as the pastor, and I felt like he was trying to do a good thing, and mm-hmm. You know, the kids are mostly very young, people early 20s, late teens, were sort of people who were trying to clean up their life and get away from a negative lifestyle.
I'm always wary of these drug war programs, which, I mean, I love to see rehabilitation. I just it smacks me as part of the often, you know, sort of a continuing an endless cycle where you don't go after the causes, which have to do with criminalization of, you know, and making the drug war very profitable. Instead, you...
Well, I hope this is, you know, like you said, the rehab side of things, it's been shown that actually some conservative states such as Arizona have just taken steps recently to put people into rehab programs instead of prison, which is... seems like maybe finally people are waking up as to the nature of the drug thing. The drug war has consumed literally billions of dollars, and a large number of the prisoners are in jail for nonviolent drug offenses, which is not only a waste of tax
There's also, of course, a vast source for corruption of police departments.
Yeah, I mean, there's a whole bureaucracy, a whole interest group, the prison guards union, you know, the courts, the judges, the DAs, the cops. I mean, it's an industry, and it's counterproductive to our society.
So naturally, at the budget hearing, there was a cutback of funding for the drug war in our police department, right?
I didn't see that. Robert somehow must have passed me by. I think that one thing that was good about the police budget is that the pattern in the past has been to accept grants from the federal government for more police positions, and then after 3 or 4 years, the grants run out, and then you're stuck funding these things out of your own budget permanently, more or less, unless you want to try to cut back on the police positions. And in this budget, no new grant positions were accepted, and I believe the budget had to be increased $400,000 to fund these people who had been previously federally funded. So hopefully we're turning the corner on that situation. As we were talking about earlier, 33% of the budget for police is a very large proportional expenditure.
When a person who is not too well informed watching most of us are not well informed, I'm sure, and that's why we really appreciate your update. We're talking to Fred Geiger, again, local activist here in Santa Cruz, who spent many hours last night both at City Council in front of the TV screen watching the City Council pass the 99-2000 budget. What votes were most significant that showed either the maintenance of the old guard majority and how the budget was being, you know, apportioned, or ultimately showed a real change? Any particular points that you think we should focus on?
Yeah, I've got some things here I can quote for you here, Robert, and once again flipping pages of the 400-page budget here or something. Okay, here we go. The golf course, some of the supporters made quite clear was not a country club, although some of it may appear to be pretty...
Gosh, I've never seen any homeless people up there on the golf course. I guess that's
hit balls at him or something like that.
Why have I seen too many low-income people? Maybe not even as caddies. Maybe there could be a Caddy for Peace program.
Okay. Well, let me read a couple things to you here that I think are significant. As far as they are raising the golf course fees, although I want to point out there are senior fees and student fees that were not affected, which I think is appropriate. And we did get the COLA for social services, even though it was sort of like a stroke of luck that it happened, that the money was available after everything else had been funded. And
do any Hispanic people actually use that damn golf course? I mean, do they have I know some urban cities have some plans to take, you know, youth camping. Is there a golfing for young people program for low-income people in the beach flats?
Yeah, that's an interesting idea. Maybe I think there's a board there at the golf course maybe should be approached with that idea. That would be a great...
It's always seemed pretty obscene to me that they have acres and acres of golfing, and they can't find a quarter of an acre to set up an emergency zone to put people as far as sleeping goes, where they can sleep without getting beaten by troll busters, you know? I mean, it's grossly disproportionate. I mean, it's really standard, you know, like the French Revolutionary stuff, where old regime kind of stuff, where the fat cats sit around, you know, stuffing their bellies and taking up all the space while everybody else is sort of peering in the windows and suffering, you know, from the elements. To me, it just seems such a very gross obscenity that I would wonder why progressive Santa Cruz would allow this kind of contrast. But
the theory here is that was presented by the supporters was that it pays for itself, and the council did vote to hire a consultant to look into the operation of the golf course to see if it does in fact pay for itself, and there's ways to perhaps raise the fees and make some money for the city off this large piece of land that the city has invested in.
How much are they paying the consultant?
I don't know, but I mean, I support it if it ends up in the golf course. You know, like I say, the city does have a large investment in this piece of land. I think it could bring no revenue, as most investments are intended to do, and hopefully with this consultant, we'll be able to figure out the appropriate fee level to make money off this investment.
Mm-hmm.
And to answer your question, I got the page out here now, a couple of things that that did happen in the budget that were, I felt, significant. They did appoint the San Lorenzo Urban River Task Force to monitor the Corps of Engineers' alleged restoration of the river to make sure it is a real restoration. They also voted to provide the funds for a staff ecologist to coordinate, you know, all the outside consultants that are functioning on various projects, as well as try to oversee some of the city's projects. And you know, this is an ecologically minded town, and it's important to the people. And I think that that was a good decision to get someone like that on the staff. I mean, it's amazing that we haven't had anybody on the staff. There's a halftime bicycle coordinator that was added to the public works department. Another thing that was controversial was the Visitors and Convention Bureau was requesting an increase in funding from the city of from $381,000, I believe, to $400,000. And this wasn't last night, but this was earlier in the budget hearings. The Visitors and Convention Bureau was told basically that they better start shopping for some other funds, since the city's paying the overwhelming majority of this, and the actual transient occupancy taxes that are generated by tourist hotel room rentals have apparently been flat for the last 10 years, so it's not clear how this investment of several million dollars over the last few years has really added any revenue to the city. And so they were given a freeze, not a raise, for this year, but told that next year they could expect a significant cut, probably in the half to the third range. And I think that's definitely a step in the right direction. Especially if we're not getting a return on the money, what are we doing here? And a big one for me, because I'm involved in transportation issues, was the Master Transportation Investment Program was fast-tracked, which will get things moving as far as an overall plan. Like a couple of people pointed out on the console last night, so far we've been sort of doing a piecemeal street-by-street approach, but there are traffic engineers who are educated in the best ways to alleviate congestion problems.
Now, this linked into your plan to have a kind of a distant parking lot and
town. But a big picture thing that we're talking about getting done here, because obviously, just widening streets and building parking structures forever is not going to work. And, we're running out of room to widen the streets and build parking structures. It doesn't serve people. We create a lot of congestion, and we do need some long-term, wide perspective type solutions that do exist elsewhere. And we do have a rail line that runs basically right through our city, north to south, and then right in the middle of the city, turning east and west, which would cost hundreds of millions, I think, to acquire and construct if it wasn't there already. And it seems to me that, we should utilize it. We could probably just pay a franchise fee or something and run some kind of a trolley or whatever that would be actually a tourist attraction, and eliminate a lot of the traffic that the tourists have to sit in and to get to the boardwalk area, and that the locals have to try to go around or wait till it dissipates so they can...
Didn't you get some kind of support from the three new city council people during the election for this proposal?
Yeah, especially Tim, who was on the Transportation Commission, clearly is a quite informed person on this sort of subject, and I think that I think the whole council, I hope, would be recognizing that the traffic, it was in a survey paid for by the city that came out in April, I believe, mentioned by 43% of the people as the largest concern they had is quality of life issues in Santa Cruz, about three times as much as the level of concern. So obviously something that every council person should support. It's overwhelmingly the number one concern of the constituents.
And we heard lots of, we're new council members, don't bother us about human rights for the poor around the sleeping ban issue. Wait till after the 2000 election and we get our new majority, everything will be okay then. But, has your proposal got either some vigorous support from any council members that are currently on the council, or even, I would hope, even more so, has it gotten a fourth vote from the old guard people such as Catherine Byers?
Well, I think that what we got here is this Master Transportation Investment Study that's going to take about a year to a year and a half, that will analyze all the possibilities and put financial numbers on accomplishing them. And at that point, then people will have to start making up their minds what they think is workable.
Is this kind of analysis and this kind of time lag really necessary, in your opinion?
I think in this case it really is, Robert. As you know, on the homeless issue, I didn't feel like that things were being dealt with as properly as possible or as necessary. But in this case, it's the sort of thing where you really do have to get some experts that have training in these kind of large-scale traffic management things, and let them come up with some possibility, some alternatives, some financial figures, and then, you know, the community needs to sit down and
does it take a year to do?
Apparently, it does. I mean, I'm not in the consulting business, and I can't say I know much about it, but I know that I think that the product is very desirable, but the amount of time and money it takes to get that product, I have no idea why or if it should be as it is, but nevertheless, I think we need that product to make a wise decision.
A number of speakers at Oral Communications talked about skateboarding, and they're concerned about a skateboarding park at Mary Lagoon. You and I were kind of scoffing at their concerns, although, you know, I know some people in that line that I'm not entirely unfriendly with, in that line of speakers. What is the solution to those seeking to have skateboarding places? Certainly there should be places for people to skateboard, and they've been batting this one around for years, and issuing tickets, you know, endlessly.
This is the deal with, so everyone supports skateboarding because it's a nice, wholesome thing for the kids to do, but nobody wants to be around them when they're doing it, which, you know, I mean, I can understand their sentiments. The people in particular that were speaking last night, I think, were residents of the area around the town end of the Nuri Lagoon place, and they're worried mainly, I think, about the access through their area to this skateboard park, which is actually located very close to the proposed skateboard park. It's located very close to the intersection of Bay and California Street by the entrance to the sewer plant area from California and where the railroad tracks cross California near Bay. So I think their main concern is just the impact on them in that area towards the opposite end of what we're doing. And I think that I can understand their point there. The site itself, I don't think that, to me, represents a lot of problems, being as it is sort of up in the corner of two streets and a railroad track. There is a children's playground there already, and
there's already noise there.
Pardon me?
There's already noise there.
Well, that's my point, yeah, and it's very isolated from any houses. You know, as far as the noise impact, I don't think it would be much, but the environmental impact from the noise also, I don't think it would be that significant. Maybe there'd be some way of putting some little speed bumps on the boardwalk, sidewalks that go all through that. That was one of their main concerns, was that the people would be going through all those little floating boardwalks through the lagoon and disrupting the ecology, and also near their houses in the project there, making a lot of noise. So that would seem to me to be the biggest problem with that, if somehow the sidewalk or the floating boardwalk there could be designed to discourage skateboard riding, that would perhaps solve the problem, or at least the majority of the problem with that. Otherwise, I think the site itself is probably not that bad of a site, being, as I said, two streets and a railroad track running right next to it. Doesn't seem like a highly ecologically preserved area in the first place to me.
I kind of interrupted you in the midst of your kind of recitation of interesting, crucial votes in the budget. Is there any more you want to add about...
Here's one you might be interested in, Robert. Homeless Issues Task Force voted 4-3 to spend $10,000 to provide staff to a group of citizens looking to a year-round shelter and other current issues affecting homeless people. There was a 4-3 majority. I know you're frustrated, as are many people, with the pace of the developments here, but nevertheless, at least we see a 4-3 pattern here to maybe do something.
There's a 4-3 pattern to throw things to a homeless task force rather than take real action in the council, that's for sure.
I mean, like I said, I agree that I'd like to see things happen faster, but otherwise, if it wasn't that 4-3, I guess the issue would be completely dead, which is worse than having it be stumbling along anyway. So I thought I'd point it out there.
Sure. We were wondering if, you know, the staff, that they should really pay some homeless people to be staff. I mean, I assume that by that $10,000 appropriation, are they just saying they're going to pay the same hacks who did the staffing for the task force to examine the camping ordinance? What are they saying there?
Well, I don't think we're going to spend any money on homeless out of that money, but I think it's staff to this homeless issues task force.
That's another job for a middle-class person to give information from the same kinds of sources that gave us the wonderful...
No, Robert, let's not be classist here.
I don't know. I'm concerned about the fact that the same gang of old gardists, Barisoni, Dick Wilson, the city manager, and, you know, others who run the departments and essentially have been kind of running the show the last couple of years, are now going to be given some more funding to give input to the homeless issues task force. I mean, what I'm saying is, if they're going to fund a staff to the homeless issues task force, let the Homeless Issues Task Force decide who it wants to pay.
Mm-hmm. Well, that may be the case. That's probably a good suggestion. I don't really know how that selection process is going to be made. I do know that there were several good appointments to the Homeless Issues Task Force. You probably could name them better than myself, but I do remember at the time there was several that I was fairly happy with.
Oh, yeah, they certainly many good people were appointed, but that's one of the ways to marginalize people is to throw them into a little ghetto where they get to talk, but they don't have any power to do anything, and in fact, they're encouraged not to engage in street activism and direct action because they're supposed to be, quote, the responsible liaison. But, you know, I mean, it's possible that if this group decided, you know, saw through this facade and realized that every day that they fund the task force is another day they're not funding, you know, basic rights for homeless people. They're just funding talking about it.
As you probably saw by the level of police presence at the last council meeting, I guess bomb throwing inside that.
Well, I was going to bring my pies, but the sight of Andy Crane out there did dissuade me. I didn't want to waste a pie on Andy.
There you go. Pies, not bombs. Is that it?
Pies, not lies, is the way I look at it.
Anyway, I hope the homeless task force will be able to get their own staff person, and I think that the idea is that they're going to come up with some recommendations, and when they do come up with the recommendations, I hope the council will follow through and start implementing some of these recommendations.
But in essence, I guess what I'm hearing from you is that, generally speaking, the old guard kind of, with a few exceptions, like a bicycle coordinator half position and a little of this and a little of that, it was still pretty much business as usual for the city council, the same old regime, even in power in spite of the November sweep?
Well, like I said, I think it was significant that they made a conscious decision to stop accepting police grants that would end up, you know, costing the city hundreds of thousands of dollars a year extra down the line as far as adding new
police. What percentage of the police budget did that affect?
That's a tough one, Robert. I can't give you that one immediately. I think it was in the low hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Oh, not much, in other words.
But it's just been this constant increase. I'll get that page in a second. It just takes a while.
Well, I mean, $700,000+ was given to the police for computers in addition to $300,000 grants for furniture, a $13 million police station that is now...
And you're tuning for Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. We're listening to Fred Geiger, a city council observer and activist.
Sure, just keep rolling on and on. We're talking to Fred Geiger here on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. And Fred is an early bird this morning. Unfortunately, it looks like we wake up this morning, we find the same old regime in power, just with some new faces on the side. Though I guess you're much more optimistic about Fitzmaurice Crone and Sugar than I am. You're ever hopeful that somehow if we can just wait till 2000 and elect another person, things will not have deteriorated to the point where the new guard will become the old guard, right?
Well, I certainly do hope the new guard doesn't become the old guard. That part of your statement I'll agree with. And we were talking about the trends in the new budget, hopefully some positive and progressive trends. And I had looked up this figure here as far as the police department expenses. The trend here from 2 years ago, from 97-98 to the 99-2000 proposed budget, the personnel services have gone from about $8.9 million to almost $9.8 million. So that's almost $1 million increase in 2 years. Roughly, I would say a little under 10%.
Well, you've got to do something about those errant skateboarders, criminal sitters, and vicious panhandlers that are sullying the landscape downtown. Although, I mean, in fact, I'd like to know what we really don't have any indication of is, I don't at least have any indication of, perhaps it's somewhere, is what's the crime situation in the last 2 years?
That doesn't appear in the budget, I'm afraid. I know there was questions during the beach plan about some of the statistics that were kept. They did mention that the crime in the beach area had gone down radically in the last couple of years. And they weren't able to separate the statistics out to show what percentage of the crimes were committed by visitors to the boardwalk, which is sort of noted as not exactly attracting the most sober or
tidy
and tourism.
Neither sober nor tidy, those boardwalks.
Right, and that was something that would be, I think, useful so we could see what the actual cost of of the influx into the boardwalk area is what are those tourists costing us? We know what they bring us, but we don't know what they cost us, and I think that would be something that would be worth looking at. But the crime rate has gone down quite a bit, apparently.
Crime rate has gone down, but the number of police officers around has gone up, and the amount of money for the police department seems to have risen as well. You have a rise in the personnel. Is there also a similar rise? Do you have a sense of the entire police budget over the last few years? Or?
Well, obviously with that new facility that apparently has gotten pretty out of hand as far as the construction costs, I think the police department is going to have to realize that they've had their new car or whatever, their new building, and they're going to need to live with it for a long time. And, there's been constant requests for additional furnishings, and I don't know, it's just a long list. It seems like there's always something else that needs to be bought.
Well, I noticed way back in December when I brought up these issues, we actually got responses from Sugar and Crone asking that there be reports, the reports of which never seemed to see much of the light of day. I didn't see them. I guess they must have shown up somewhere.
Staff reports that were given, but they're not always automatically put on the agenda. But if they were staff reports, they should probably be public, and that would be a good way of...
It'd be nice if these guys followed up, if these council members who have taken or asked the staff to bring these issues forward, then at the next council meeting mentioned the results of these staff inquiries, so that there's a process where the public is really informed about what's going on.
Yeah, that would be nice if there was a mechanism. That's something I'm concerned with. I remember in the past Don Barricelli was asked to investigate himself over some possibly inappropriate conduct, trying to accuse Phil Bear of...
he cleared himself?
...racism, and I never did. Well, in the heat of the election, and Celia Scott, the outgoing mayor, was the one who requested that he investigate himself, and the heat of the election and the new council coming in and all that, I didn't follow up on asking how guilty he had found himself, if guilty at all.
Well, that's interesting. One's always eager to see how whether he tried himself and finally executed himself, or whether he simply put himself on trial.
Although it was pointed out by two councilmen late last night that you probably missed that they were somewhat annoyed with him reading a magazine while they were discussing his contract being renewed.
He was definitely getting nervous as you spoke early in the evening. He was shuffling papers more vigorously than I've ever seen him before.
And it increased productivity for our money then.
I suppose it has that positive effect. My concern again is that, I think it would be nice I think it's important that they initiate this kind of a process, and I suggest in your closed meetings with these people, which you have every month and which most of us are not invited to, you bring up these issues, Fred.
There's no cigars left, so it's not a smoky background.
I guess not.
My room too, actually.
Right. I still think it shows us exactly, the quality of the of the process that's really going on, and the nature of the process, that they will meet only with those people who will not vigorously criticize them, only with those people who are their supporters, so they can maintain this skewed view of how well they're doing in the eyes of the community. But nonetheless, I think it's what's unfortunate is I do call them up occasionally and say, look, how about this idea and that idea. I rarely get calls back. Sugar hasn't called me back in 4.5-5 months. We talked about that at length. I expect that kind of treatment from Matthews, who never calls me back, but not from individuals who claim who got my support in the last election, and who are supposedly working on the same kinds of issues. And particularly, you can see the problem that we're having with these people, and I'm talking about Brown, Fitzmaurice, and Sugar, around issues of even elementary democracy, like extending oral communications. Crone was asked last night to extend oral communications by note. He took no such effort whatsoever. Frequently, people try to get his attention in the audience, raising their hand. He is dead to the world.
I'm not going to dis...
The reason I mention it is it happens so repeatedly that it becomes clear that there is no sensitivity to these issues in the most most elementary level.
Well, I would feel like there's an improvement in that. As a matter of fact, I would think that if the issue of having staff reports I think they are available, but that's something I'd like to find out also is, are they available? How did the person go about finding them? I was trying to call a city office the other day, and I couldn't get anything but a voicemail. So I guess the new system's probably saving staff time, but I'm not sure you know, if it's actually enhancing the...
I mean, it seems to me obvious that there is no, you know, no follow-up by Crone and Sugar and Fitzmaurice on these issues. Fitzmaurice seems to actually try to follow up more, even though I like his votes less.
Well, it's interesting, Robert, because I feel like I get less telephone response from Tim than I do the other two, but, you know, maybe...
Fitzmaurice is the only person I can ever reach at home.
Maybe he...
Sugar doesn't give out his home phone number.
Then...
Crone throws you into an answering machine. You call Fitzmaurice, you'll actually get him picking up the phone and saying, hello, and he'll talk to you.
Well, I mean, I think it's great...
Not that he has anything to say.
That we can all, you know, participate in government to the maximum amount possible, but I know that, you know, these guys are really busy. Some of them still are trying to keep a job.
And I'm tired of that excuse, too, because we know they've had six months now, more, to get student interns, to get volunteers, and they chose not to do it. And I'm sorry, I have no sympathy for city council members who wail about being too busy, or their supporters who cover their asses by saying they're too busy.
I don't follow your student interns.
Well, what I'm saying is that they've had 6 months to get people to help them.
Well, that was on the agenda last night, isn't it?
Well, it doesn't matter what it was on the agenda. It was on the agenda, you know, it should have been on the agenda 6 months ago. More important, it's not a proper excuse to use after 6 months that you don't have people to help you, when in fact, people have been coming forward and offering to help you. You're choosing to let yourself be real busy and get wrapped up in the Barisone Wilson Byers machine there.
I agree that I'd like to see them close as possible to the community and get more assistance if that's what
But they aren't. That's the point. And because they're not, it does not behoove us to defend them and to say, oh gosh, they're too busy, oh gosh, it's new, oh gosh. I mean, let me put it this way. You may say that all you want, and you certainly have the right to. I find it a very specious kind of excuse, and I don't like it, and all I can say is I'm glad that you're putting out the information and doing the kind of watchdogging you are, and I wish that it had more impact.
Well, I mean, I don't think everybody's ever going to get the degree of personal contact. I mean, I feel like, yeah, gee, I wish I had more personal contact with these people I did before they got elected, but yeah, I just accept.
But I'm not talking about personal contact, Fred. I'm talking about the fact that they should have had people helping them, like assistants. You don't need to have a person appointed by the city to do that, though that could have been done too. They have had, you know, offers of volunteers month after month, particularly around the sleeping van situation, and they chose not to take those offers up. It's really disingenuous of a supporter, would be disingenuous of you, to say, oh gosh, you know...
Oh, don't use that word, Robert. It gives me bad memories.
No, does it? You catch my drift, Fred. I think you're covering their ass, and I don't think it should be.
Great, Robert.
Yes.
I hope it's buried, but I understand your point. I'd like to have...
It's not personal contact. I think if they're going to claim busyness as an excuse that they can only claim it, and then at the same time refuse help, it doesn't jive. It doesn't work. It's not true. And we have to be honest with ourselves and with those around us who want change, and recognize it's not true, and that, you know, and act accordingly.
I'd like to see them have assistance. That was on the agenda for the budget. Although, yeah, the idea of having unpaid volunteers is also valuable. Personally, I'm
not just the idea. I mean, they've had the option. They have chosen not to exercise the option. I mean, what are we going to do? Why should we keep repeating? Gosh, it would be nice if when in fact they've had those options and they've not taken them up.
Well, I don't know much about the issue, to tell you the truth. I know that, you know, having put these things into operation also takes time and energy as far as telling the people, you know, what you want them to do, how you want them to do it, what you don't want them to do it, when and where you want them to do it, and all these sort of things. So, I mean, to some extent that takes more of their time and energy just to get it off the ground. I'm hoping now that the budget is, you know, the first budget cycle in their new term has about been wrapped up, that this really intense pace that they found themselves thrust into is going to whack it off a bit for a while, and we're going to start to be able to pick up some of this backlog of things that we have been mentioning here and get some of them resolved. And these points are being made because they need to be kept out there, so that hopefully there will be some action on them soon.
And I think we're going to probably look into that backlog in our next conversation, but of course, August is vacation for our fine city council, so they're going to be off having a gay old time while those who they have criminalized will be trying to find a place to sleep at night and dodge clubs and chains from trollbusters, only two of whom are in the custody of the police.
Yeah, it's bad to see those guys get apprehended. It seems like the Nazi element here is, thriving, but they had the one guy, I guess, who was... sure if he killed himself or not.
He did, yeah.
That was one of the local Nazi activists, and then I guess one of these kids that was arrested is also a Nazi and a hate monger, and...
Well, yeah, but see, it's awfully easy to try to pick on the guys who look like the weirdest and the craziest, who may or may not be involved, who probably are. You know, but the more respectable types, the upper middle class white kids who slip out at night and do this shit and come back in, who some have suggested are related to police officers, as they were like 20 years ago, although that may or may not be the case, they don't get in the papers, they don't get arrested, they get covered up. And the basic problem is left undealt with, which is a safe place for sleep for people.
Yeah.
Not a long-time campground I'm talking about. We're talking about an emergency solution to a public crisis. And the mayor of our town, who is on the Homeless Services Center, is refusing to even issue a press release on the issue. She didn't even show up at the last Homeless Services Center Board of Directors meeting. I mean, it is a disgrace. Just as the way, you know, we have the city council coddling Cynthia Matthews and her six-month stalemating of the Citizens Police Review Board with these endless excuses that she cannot find a candidate among all the, I think it's 16 or 17
candidates. That's the volunteer list. I don't know if I'd be seen as qualified or not.
I don't think you're qualified. You're obviously much too... Well, I won't even get into your problem.
Well, I did live in Los Angeles and suffer some degree of police abuse, so maybe I'd be biased. I don't know.
Well, can you successfully evade meaningful action for years at a time, as most members, well, as all members of the board have done?
The new ones are break now. They just got there and they're doing the right thing.
I would say that in some sense. In another sense, when you look at the results of every particular complaint. I went into the CPRB and I got the results of every complaint for the last 6 months. Each of them, with one exception, accords with the recommendation of the police chief, and there's only one complaint that has been sustained. Those include, half of that record is our new board.
Yeah.
So I'm afraid it doesn't look too good for our new board.
I could probably become more informed on what the situation was.
It's a sad situation.
It just needs to be more open where, you know, things are done in an open manner.
And they are trying, process-wise, they're trying to make significant changes. But in terms of content, it looks bad. It looks like, you know, when they grab someone and throw them to the ground for selling newspapers, as they did Steve Argue in November, and you complain about it, the complaints are thrown out. It's really sad.
What the vote was on that as far as who voted how.
It was unanimous. Unanimous.
Right.
They have always voted unanimously, with one exception when there was an abstention. It is outrageous when you look at their record. I'll get the records to you.
Well, I hope that things are moving in the right direction. I mean,
your hope is wonderful, but let's look at what the realities are, and we'll go into that again in more detail next time. We've been talking to Fred Geiger, who I'm not going to cut off. I'm going to give him the last word on this issue. He's a community activist, union organizer, and just a general all-around, I would have to call him something of a troublemaker, in spite of my tendency to dismiss him as a schmoozerama.
I sort of identify myself as a chronic political malcontent, Robert, but there needs to be some of those around to keep the issues stirred up, I think, and you have a niche in that area as well, I believe, so we'll keep plugging away, I hope.
Hey, thank you, Fred.
Take care, Robert.
Miles away, the man on the ridge. was asking for continuity. Food and medicine and families for the soul. There's a pump, a rumble, and a building sway. A soldier fires the acid spray. The public address and sometimes the place out of the morning. You run for cover and hide your eyes. You hear them scream for paradise.
Freedom. The song, of course, was Salvador. This is Free Radio, 96.3 FM. I'm Robert Norris. Show is Bathroom Spears Broadsides. And the number for you to call, if you want to comment on anything you've heard or discuss some stuff you haven't heard that you think perhaps we all should be hearing, the number is 427-3772. 427-FRSC, Free Radio Santa Cruz. 4273772. Well, I wasn't able to get an exact update on this issue, but I saw an interesting story on the internet last Tuesday, July 13th. San Jose focuses on squatters. Police issue warning, citations make arrests. It's the Mercury News. I'm going to read it to you. I think you might find it of interest. Before I do, however, let's take this phone call.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
I was just listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, and I thought I heard somebody say Fred Geiger and Robert Norris were in the same niche.
That's what Fred Geiger said.
Fascinating.
Well, Fred is obviously trying to feather his nest with my downy
knit, huh?
Pillows, I guess.
A soft niche?
Actually, Fred is a very articulate and well-connected activist, union activist for many a year who...
I agree. I thought
his views are a bit more conservative than mine, but still.
I thought he was very articulate on the issues you fished around with, but I'd like to suggest one thing that's a correction.
Mm-hmm.
And this will happen to anyone. Measure O is the city's law or regulation about pretending to provide some opportunity for low-income affordable housing, and Measure J is the county's. And the county's one was put in place first.
And together it's OJ.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But apparently it's unenforced no matter how you swallow it.
Well, it's watered down to the point where the people who most need for those provisions to work, it doesn't help them.
Now, Linda, you're an activist with Housing Now in Santa Cruz, co-founder, in fact. Is that accurate?
No, I didn't found it. It was a Santa Cruz branch of the National Housing Now, which helped get people to the march that Mitch Snyder led
back
before he died.
1989.
Yeah, and so what I've done is just decided to keep that alive after those immediate goals had been met and the original Housing Now! Organizers were
kind of spread out. Can you give us a kind of a brief description of O and J and how how they are and are not being followed and what it would mean?
I can give you my opinion about it. I don't know if this is a legally valid point of view, but I've followed the county.
Proposition O is the city's measure, and J is the county's
measure.
Why don't we start with O? What does it require, and is it being followed?
Well, Measure O is kind of a copy of the county one. They work the same way, essentially. And it depends on whether you ask me or Barisoni if it's being followed, in my opinion.
Barisoni is our city attorney, of course.
In my opinion, it's just a tangent to give builders and developers a little trouble, which they buy their way out of in most cases.
Mm-hmm.
Because when I read it and when they were being passed into law, it seemed to me to say that for every X number of houses that are developed, a certain percentage, like a sixth, I forget what it is in Measure O, but for the county it's every sixth or seventh unit, should be affordable to the working people here.